Tom Murphy, reel two.
Reel. Wash my shirt and roll it. Roll the bottle, the hot water. And I looked down there with a tie in his shirt, and the lads just weighed something, Murphy. You know, bugging him, get all the lads, the unemployed place. She said, "Well, stop it. Just could you get me in?" You know, and you old Chris, you couldn't do that. Couldn't do that. So, from then I got in with Bob Walker, and we started we were cook at Gatwick Airport at the beginning. Shift work, two of us, serving 120 men, novice. We're baking an egg and a midday meal and then a feed at night. A spoonful of this and a spoonful of that out of the open. It was cooked. You whipped the tea, big bucket, and put it in the teapots and happy to do it. I done a bit of fiddling there when they paid you for clothes and only put a dollar in the back of that pocket. Fiddled. I says, "Bob, are you getting cracking?" No, I says, "Bob, first thing to do, we're paid off. The guy's not doing well and he's closing down. Because he couldn't make anything. Well, we were all taken out of the bowls. There was no cash register. Barkers was there at St. Cross were the people. And from that, Bob, the best thing to do is to get a room so as you can work from the room." So when I got stuck, Bob wouldn't go to the dock because he's more clerical than that. Bob wouldn't go to the dock to cool storage where you're putting a coat on and tighten your waist and carry a quarter of meat on your back and the limb and put it in its place. Four quarters to an animal, 200 weight each. And then we got the picture jobs. King of the Dam, The Ghost Goes West, Ourselves Alone, Mary Queen of Scots. And The Ghost Goes West, The Scarlet Pimpernel. And done them jobs. Got a guinea a day. And it is for supping them. In a van, hoose and shirt, and a nice tie, a nice brown bright jacket and the worsted pants.
What were you doing for the pictures?
Oh, we're just dressed up as soldiers, all soldier pictures. And H.G. Wells is charging over the bridge with the gas mask on. And then John Loder, if you remember, you would just be a baby. John Loder will come in there and he says, "The globe is still warm. I must be here. Looking for the regulars." That was the RIR, or what is known as the Republican Army at that time, which didn't do what they're doing now. It was a different class of Irish that fought for rights, colonies. Process. So we got the room. Mrs. Barker, she was a Yorkshire woman, she was a lovely landlady, and in Westminster Bridge Road, and we had a big bed together for 3.5 years. We were mates together. Now I says, "Bob, if you get a job, you take it. And if I get a job, I'll take it." So I got a job in Ealing, in off Hamilton Street, in Ealing Common, the Faversham Hotel. And I was porter and a second cook doing the greens and that. And Mac Yates, he asked me, the cook, what I wanted at night. I says, I'll have steak and chips, the marble table. But then I was still reading the Worker, the Daily Worker, and I said I couldn't get time to spend the money I had because you only got a Sunday off, and in those days, and at £60, and Chrissy, my sister-in-law, my brother was a ship's joiner, and he was on the Queen Mary and that. And I says, Chrissy, there's 60. If I don't show up again, I won't require it. Divided between the girls, I won't trouble you. But if I come back, I'll maybe want a pair of pants and a jacket. And then I went into the hospital, I was in Thomas's, and I had gangrene, rotten with gangrene.
How did you get gangrene?
Oh, I from the air in Candessa. They come down and shelled and bombed and blew 3 inches of the bone away. And two Spanish lads took me back. It was only 10 miles I had to walk with it. And Cooney, Bob Cooney, that got Johnny Loban, that got killed, tied the shirt sleeves together and pulled my arm in and put it in it, and he got shot. And my number two got shot that held up the belt. He says, Paddy, where am I going to sit? He says, I there. He says, how am I going to sit there to see me? What's this? I had a pick and shovel. Get down there. Get in there in the pick and shovel. Because I was brought up country and, you know, I knew all about pick and shovel, and the students would hit their way back in the dugout. I says, no. Hit near Han and it'll fall. Only go the 2 inches back at a time. Don't be in a hurry. 2 inches back at a time and the dirt will fall. Because if you're hitting back there, you're doing no good. It's too long. The space is too long. The young lads.
Before that, why was it that you decided to go?
Well,
how did you learn about it?
Always read the papers, and I thought it'd be place to go. And after me rearing of my sisters in the warerooms at 8 shillings a week, I said it was me place to go. It's a government elected by the people, and I'll sure go and give a hand.
Was it difficult to join up?
No, I had to.
How did the recruiting work?
Well, they said it's tough. Joe Hinks, he got killed in the Chinese army after. Joe Hinks and that in Charing Cross Road, I had a shake. I had a cup of tea. And he says, now, make up your mind. It's tough. Well, I said, I'd been in Shelling in Ireland, and he says, I know all about the black and tans. And I said, I know all about the shelling of the forecourts. And so I know something about war. I says, I'll stand it. So I went with a passing show under my arm, and I got picked up in Paris with a passing show under my arm. A paper at that time, a magazine. That's how they knew you. And so the French guys made me write. And 20 of us went over the Pyrenees, but two of them couldn't make it and went back. we give them a few francs, and I give them a loaf of bread and a tin of tobacco. That's just meat for the lights. Per pinion, meat for the lights.
When was it that you went over to Spain?
1937.
37. And what month?
About March. It was very cold, and the guide had sugar lumps and rum. But you mustn't lick your lips, because you'd get frostbitten. And if you slipped and fell, you would fall a big distance, so nobody knew where you were, because you could see so far.
You walked across the Pyrenees?
Yes. The guide took us the pad, the sheep guy. I got into Figueres, where Boney Napoleon stabled his horses at one time. Music work and draining and everything for the horses, for the Urion. Better looked after by Jesus than Martin, the horses. So we lay there for a while, and then we went on to Figueres and got drilled there. And then I drilled 36 men, three groups, different from the British Army. The British Army in the past war got all the ideas from us, the Spanish War, the buttons on the trousers and the pockets for they carry the magazine in the trouser pockets, with the Russian automatic rifle with 25 rounds.
Before you went out to Spain, how much did you know about what was going on? Were you able to keep well informed, or was the press not accurate?
Oh, the press are read between the lines, because I always had the read of any camp. I was on a railroad job for a while from a place called Port Cameron to Moss Vale, 40 miles. And in a camp, I found the Ragged Trouser Philanthropist, the Communist Manifest. And I says, this is my life. This is great. What wonderful people these are, the writers. You know, do you mean to do away with private property? Exactly so, for 9/10 of the community have nothing but their labor power to offer. And different items out of the 48 leaves of the Communist Manifest.
Had you joined the party before you went to Spain?
No, it wasn't in the party, but I always went in marches. I joined the party in 1942, when the Russians was getting it tough. And then when the Russians come on, then it chimed in with us. Millions of people chimed in with us and said we were right. When it was on the placards, 300,000 cut off, and so on and so forth, 400,000 cut off. Other place. It was the men that rubbed their skin with oil, the Mongolian soldier coming up from the back, and Stalin had to be hard, he had to be cruel to be kind, and he built the Red Army up and all the machinery. So it took me hat off to Stalin and what he come through. Although they didn't side with it in the Daily Worker, but I still say he was a great man. He'd come back and be put in front alongside Lenin later on. for his greatness. He never turned back.
Before you went to Spain, did you know any Spanish?
Oh, not a word of Spanish. But I got used to it, but not proper grammar because of that. I never got any schooling, you know. The pure schooling I got was plenty of beatings with canes and one thing or another. But when they put the atlas up on the board, I was always interested in the atlas, you know, seeing the atlas tell me all about it. And they said that our empire, and it was a national school, Irish school. Says, hey, it's not our empire. We haven't got an empire. It's their empire, not our empire. Well, while they were thieving and robbing and plundering abroad, all empires, Turkish and all, have left their stain in Bulgaria and all along the northern part of Russia, or the southern part of Russia. They've left the dark eyes and the black hair from the Turkish empire. All these countries were brutal empires, not blaming the English for being not too. They were just as brutal, burning and whipping and to sending people out to different countries and murdering them.
You were speaking of Stalin, but what about the Stalinist purges and all the...
I agree that he got a man of that age that come through so much. He was a wee bit on edge. And he made sure that no one would turn back. So he took the heads of anything that he just thought. You see, the purges of Stalin. But he built up something in the back, and he was brutal.
You think that was necessary for him to do in order to keep...
Like a doctor taking a leg or an arm off, you have to be cruel to be kind. That's my outlook. So I'm not going to condemn Stalin.
In Spain, did you get uniform and equipment and so on?
Oh no, you got anything from different countries. I had a Chinese cap with two buttons on it. You know, a Chinese canvas cap that they brought out. And I had from Switzerland stockings at the bottom of the trousers. Stockings and the wide khaki trousers from Switzerland. And different... everybody had different. I had a rope around me and an automatic revolver at my side and a bandolier on me when I got hit.
What kind of arms did you have, armaments?
Well, very bad because the anarchists at the back, when they come ashore, they used them and destroyed a lot of them. And a lot of them wouldn't work properly when we got them, you know, holding up the belt. And say, I had looked back in a hole and a chance to say, make sure, lads, you put the bullets in the full way. I don't want any jams in the feed box. Because I've known a bit about the machine gun, being in the army.
Yes. How did the weapons that you had in Spain compare with what you'd known in the British Army before when you were in the Guards?
Oh, there was all kinds of Lee Enfields and different rifles. And then the Czechoslovakian gun come into being, four-piece gun, easy to put together. I forget the name of it. I forget the name of it. It was a Czechoslovakian automatic rifle, but it was a very good gun.
How long did your training period last in Spain?
Oh, well, the best you could do, I trained 36, drilled them, because there was very few soldiers. There was three or four Scots guards. One guy was an ex-sergeant, Hooky Walker, and me, and you were cut out the about turn in the form in fours, and we created the three lines of men so as to get out and get onto the camions quick. Camions was lorries to get up to the thing. And you see on the roadside when they'd be bombing the German and Italian, the flames going up. You'd be sitting watching it. We went back to a bunker. Says, oh, it won't be long, it'll soon be going. And then I had a good laugh off and went. I was that kind, you know. The good laugh. Some fellas went off, you know, the head went round on the floors and the tongue out. Some officers even. But that all happens in war. But I happen to stick it to the last, from the Arama front to the Ebro. In the Ebro I got this. This is the last 10 to come out. With Andy Marty. Andy Marty signed his name in my book. That was the French commander that wouldn't fire on the Russians in 1917, the revolution.
What sort of men did you have as officers in Spain? Oh, well, had they had experience before, military experience, or were they as new as some of the men?
Oh, no, some of them, they were new. Fred Copeman was in the and Sam Weil was in the Navy, and the New Garden, you heard of the Garden Mutiny.
Yes.
They fought for the better rights, but the army didn't. And so Bob served after me, my mate. And we slept together in a 6-foot bed in Westminster Bridge Road. He was on 2 bob a day. I had 3 and 6 pence a day.
Why was that?
Well, because they were cutting down the wages, the money. And I had 6 months for my shot. I wore the guns, the rifle guns on the arm. You know, the gold guns on the red coat and the brass ones on the charqui.
Did you have time for leave while you
were
in Spain?
Oh, I got shot. At Brunetti. I went to give a fella, a law school lad, he says, come on, Paddy, give me a hand over this heavy machine gun, you know. You know the machine guns, the Russian machine guns, with a handle on them. They're heavy, you hold them with your two horns and press. Look along this side. Say, come on. I was holding on the steel hat at the time, and I got a bullet through me right arm.
At Brunetti.
That's the first hit I got, and I got 4 or 5 days back in Madrid. They wouldn't take the money in the tram cars.
What was Madrid like at that time?
Oh, Madrid was 16 foot high, outside each building, and the telephone buildings. Every time a shell went through it, they were up filling it in, building it in, and they covered all the monuments up and took all the carpets up and all the stuff in the rooms. Put up in the Alfonso Hotel for the 24 hours. And it's here today. The coffee you're getting today is ground grain, a mixture of ground grain, that's flour, in your coffee. You even get it today, they learned that from Spain. You're getting that today when you ask for a cup of coffee. A real cup of coffee was in Madrid. But then I had to change over and do the other because I was going short, and you got a lump of bread, 3/4 rice and 1/4 flour, and it would do you a week, a slice a day. I went down to 8 stone in weight. And a bowl of a can of soup, you know, an ordinary open can of soup poured out when I come round.
8 stone, that's nothing. You're quite a tall person.
Yeah, I was, my right weight was just up on 12 stone. And Bob was 12 stone too. We were two mates for 3.5 years in the one bed. He went his road for kind of work, you know, were commissioners through turnstiles and that. And I would go to the dock to get picked up. You had to raise yourself because there was 300 lined up. And then at the finish of the pickup, it's just, don't go away, lads. I'll explain why you weren't hired. Because of the system that you're living in. Hired and fired like a dog. They're not worried about you or me. Only when they're making money.
Can you tell me something, anything you remember about the day-to-day life in Spain?
The day-to-day, you were just in the trenches there and you were dug in. If you were good on pick and shovel, you made a good posse for yourself. But the miners was the best at making the sandbags down the steps into the dugouts, and it's a bit of wood in the wall and a candle burning. And then there was a sap leading out into no man's land near the fosses, and one guy would sit at your knees, sit at the ground at your feet while you looked out for so long, an hour. And then you took your turn at looking out, staring out to see if there was anything rattling at the barbed wire, old cans and that on the wire to see if they were coming over. You'd hung grenades that with a wooden stick attached to them, where you pull the string, and it'd give good leverage. With the throw.
How far were your trenches from the fascist trenches?
Oh, not very far. Maybe 300 yards. And then Frank Ryan used to speak on the speaker. He says, "Irishmen, go home. Your fathers would turn in the grave if they knew that you come to fight for imperialism. This is the real Republican Army. The real men of iron.
And he was speaking across to the Irishmen who were fighting.
To the Irishmen, yes, because it was the blue shirts along with the Moors. And the Moors had a hatred at Spain, and they kept that up because they got put out of Spain, because they reigned Spain for 300 years. The Moors, nice physique people, but big bottoms in their trousers and wide at the bottom. They reckon that Christ would be born from man. That's why the big opening was in the pants.